You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
When I was a boy, I wanted to see the world. Bit by bit, it happened. In 1948, at the age of 3, I left my home in Mamaroneck, New York, just north of New York City, and flew with my mother to a different life in California's San Fernando Valley, outside Los Angeles. I spent my adolescent summers at the Grand Canyon and swam in the Great Pacific. Later, when my mother married again, we moved to the Murray Hill section of Manhattan, another sort of canyon. I traveled across Europe by bus when I was 17. I went to Mexico. In 1970, I moved to rural Oregon. I camped in the desert in Namibia and on the polar plateau 20 kilometers from the South Pole. I flew to Bangkok and Belém, to Nairobi and Perth, and traveled out into the country beyond. Over the years, I ate many unfamiliar meals, overheard arguments on town and city streets conducted in Pashto, Afrikaans, Cree, Flemish, Aranda, and other tongues unknown to me. I prayed in houses of worship not my own, walked through refugee camps in Lebanon, and crossed impossible mountain passes on the Silk Road. Witness was what I was after, not achievement. From the beginning, I wanted to understand how very different each stretch of landscape, each boulevard, each cultural aspiration was. The human epistemologies embedded in the 6,000 spoken ways of knowing God compare with the 6,000 ways a river can plunge from high country to low, or the 6,000 ways dawn might break over the Atacama, the Tanami, the Gobi, or the Sonora.
She's Stacy Waite.
And he's Scott Winter. And that was the writer Barry Lopez reading from his essay, 6,000 Lessons. And if you want to read the rest of that essay, you can get a copy of Prairie Schooner's fall issue, which you can get in print on Kindle or on Lit Ragger right now.
And on today's show, we're going to hear from Lopez and writer Julie Dash about places. The places we travel, the places we call home, and the places we write about. We were lucky enough to have both writers right here in the Air Schooner studio.
Barry Lopez is an essayist, author, and short story writer, and he's traveled all over the world. He's the author of Arctic Dreams, for which he received a National Book Award, and his most recent book is Homeground, Language for an American Landscape. It's a reader's dictionary of regional landscape terms, which he edited with Deborah Gwartney.
Lopez talked to Air Schooner's correspondent Jason Hertz about another essay he wrote many years ago for Harper's, and about something that happened one night while he was in Seoul, and how his thinking about that place shaped the essay that he was writing.
Basically, it was a piece exploring the pathology of consumerism. At one point, I had this idea when I was in Seoul that if I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning and got dressed and walked out into the city streets, that I would see the evolution of the city of Seoul from the 14th to the 20th century, because before dawn, the charcoal carriers would be walking in the streets, bringing charcoal to those families that were using charcoal to prepare their food, early morning meals for people that went to work at first light. And you would see the 17th, 18th, 19th century as more and more light came into the picture. And then in the 20th century, you'd see people in suits walking into the Samsung building, you know, in downtown Seoul. So I got up to do that, but I took that moment to describe the Gap clothes and the North Face clothes that I was putting on in order to go outside. And the editor at Harper's said, well, you know, this makes you look like a consumer. And I said, but wouldn't that be the point? I mean, why would a reader read an essay that was holding the ugliness of consumption up to a bright light and not implicate himself? If I'm not implicated, I know what the reader is going to say. If you're not implicated, pal, I'm not going in there very deep because I don't want to end up looking like a fool 20 pages into this essay because I too am a consumer. So that kind of truth-telling, that not misrepresenting what it is that you are to, as a writer, you know, to say, I'm implicated in this too, that's not the issue, we're all implicated, but what are we going to do? And you can't get to that question about what we're going to do as a writer unless you say to the reader, I'm just as confused as you are, but this is the best I can do with the material. What do you think? You know, that's where I want to be as a writer.
I'm really struck both in the essay Lopez read to kick off the show and in his comments there by how conscious Lopez seems to be as he moves through the places he's in. And that idea about being self-implicating seems central for so many writers as they write their experience of other places.
Yeah, Lopez talked about navigating and writing about other places with regard to another of his essays called Learning to See, a piece in which he mentions Wolverine stories from the Brook Range in Alaska. Hertz asked Lopez about that part of the essay.
What could be more presumptuous, you know, in a village in the Brooks Range and listening to people tell stories in English for my benefit, and then thinking you can render those stories, you can render a story that seems to be a rendition of a version of what it is that you heard, but you can't render the whole experience, you know. A playwright couldn't either by making it seem to come to life on a stage. I think that a lot of what I'm trying to do is say, isn't the world really amazing? To encourage people to understand that the reason to be hopeful about anything is that nobody, but nobody, can say that's the end of life, or, you know, this culture is a dead end, or anything else that makes you despair. I think now, as a writer, it's very important to step into what is in contemporary culture a dangerous place, which is to say, without reservation, that something is beautiful. People are wary of that, you know, it's considered fashionable to be detached or cynical or something like that. But it's cynicism and detachment that has created a world that's killing us. And to be engaged with the world, you have to understand that it's darker than you think and also more beautiful. And the tension between those two things is where hope is.
You know, Scott, I wish more people would say, isn't the world really amazing that convincingly? I really felt that amazement in listening to Lopez talk there.
Yeah, Stacy, it seems like one of the most important aspects of being a writer is being able to notice what makes a place remarkable, what makes it uniquely itself and full of whatever events and people it holds. Professor Waquita Dreher interviewed writer and filmmaker Julie Dash here in the Air Schooner Studios. Dash earned her MFA in film and television production at UCLA and was a fellow at the American Film Institute's Center for Advanced Film Studies. She has directed many critically acclaimed films such as Daughters of the Dust and The Rosa Parks Story, as well as narrative films and music videos. Though she is a frequent lecturer at many universities across the U.S., Dash had this to say about her own connection to the place where she grew up.
Well, I was born and raised in New York City, in Long Island City, Queensbridge Housing Projects. Both of my parents were born and raised in South Carolina. We have relatives who live on the Sea Islands. My uncle and the family home, they still are there along the Ashley River, West Ashley River. Let's say our lives were influenced and informed by the Gullah Geechee culture from which my grandmother and uncles and aunts and father lived. The way they cooked, my father was a great cook. He used to make his own style of gumbo. And just like in the movie, Daughters of the Dust, he would cut up the okra and put the little okra stumps on our foreheads. That was part of the process of making gumbo. Cooking and washing of the rice is something that I still remember my aunts explaining to me and telling me how to do it over and over and over again until it's just right. The whole notion of cooking rice that wasn't perfect was almost a cardinal sin. You never put a fork or spoon into rice once the water boils. And we heard all of these little rules of engagement for cooking and cleaning and the way we lived our day-to-day lives were, you know, influenced and formed by these cultural mores, I guess you could call them.
Julie Dash's film Daughters of the Dust was the first feature film by an African-American woman to be distributed in the United States in theatrical release. The film tells the story of three generations of Gullah women in the Pizant family on St. Helena Island in 1902. Dash talked about the significance of place and landscape in the film.
The imagery of the landscape in Daughters of the Dust is mostly sand dunes, marshland, and of course the ocean, always the ocean, and huge trees that, you know, they're all visual metaphors for family and roots and the middle passage and landing on a sandy beach coming out of the middle passage. So it was a wonderful way to focus on a different aspect of African American visual culture and memory and history by creating these tableau landscapes whenever we saw the Pizant family members interacting with one another.
In 1997, Dash wrote a novel that's essentially a sequel to her film Daughters of the Dust, and it's set 20 years later in Harlem and the Sea Islands. Dash read an excerpt from that novel, a book that brings to life deeply political and historical places.
Then, as always, following the trail of wildlife came the ancient people. At first they fled the raids of the north. Then they sought the warmer climes and the gentle breezes. When they came upon this land of abundance, they gave praise and offered tribute to Mother Earth for the kindness and generosity. Settling along the shores, they called their new home Chicora. It was the first of many names that this land would have. Each tribe that settled the land would give the island other names. San Miguel, Guadalupe, Gaul, Chara, Edisto, Johns, St. Helena, Dufusky, Kiowa, Guatemala. By the time the African captives arrived, the land would be known as the Sea Islands. It would not be the land of refuge for these people, for they had not come willingly. Herded onto ships that would transport them across the Atlantic Ocean, the peoples of West Africa, stolen from Gambia, Angola, Benin, Sierra Leone, Niger, and the Gold Coast, would arrive in Charleston, South Carolina, destined for the harsh work on plantations throughout the South. For some, the trip would be even longer to the far reaches of Texas. For others, it would be a short trip down the coast to the rice and cotton plantations of the Sea Islands. For most, it would be the last trip of their lives. They would spend their entire lives on the islands, laboring from day clean to day done, clearing the land, dredging the swamps, building the houses, planting the seed, and harvesting the crops. They would rarely see their white masters, who had long since quit to the mainland, escaping the heavy humid air, the sulfurous swamps and the poisonous snakes, and the black swarms of mosquitoes that brought the plague of malaria.
Really loved both of the readings on the show today, Lopez's essay and Dash's novel. And while of course they're very different texts, both offer a striking sense of place. The names of places, how places are connected to the people and events that have moved through them. Really powerful stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to thank both writers for being on Air Schooner, and thanks to our great interviewers, Waquita Dreher and Jason Hertz. And thank you as always for listening to Air Schooner.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Paul Hanson Clark and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson, Franny Sprowls, and Nick White. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is co-produced by Scott Winter and Stacy Waite, and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.